Hey, y'all, this is Trina Green, and it is August, and at Parenting for Liberation, we celebrate Black August. What is that? Black August has traditionally been a month to study Black resistance and freedom fighters cultivated by political prisoners here in California, the San Quentin Six. I was first introduced to Black August by BOLD, an incredible space where Black organizers come together. BOLD stands for Black Organizing for Leadership and Dignity. Black love, Black love, Black love to all my BOLD folks who are listening. So why August of all the months? Well, August commemorates significant dates in Black liberation that took place in the month of August. For example, Africans were first brought to the U.S. in August of 1619. August also marks a time of rebellion and revolution, such as here locally, the Watts Rebellion happened in August of 1965. Also, Nat Turner's Rebellion happened in August, and the Haitian Revolution happened in August. August also marks independence for some countries, such as Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago celebrate their independence in August. And also in August, we celebrate the birth of revolutionaries such as Fred Hampton, Marcus Garvey, Marsha P. Johnson, in addition to acknowledging the losses that we've had in August, such as Emmett Till, and recently we lost Toni Morrison. It is along this vein of honoring, commemorating leaders, heroes, and also the activism and the freedom fighters and the political prisoners in the Black liberation movement that we at Parenting for Liberation join this long lineage of celebration and resistance and resilience that is Black August. And we're doing that by exploring rest as resistance. And I know you might be like, huh, you were talking about, you know, rebellion, resistance, revolution, freedom fighters, political prisoners, and you're doing that by resting? How is that connected to resistance? And that's what brings us to this topic today that we're going to be discussing on the podcast a little bit, which is rest revolutionary? And why do Black people deserve more rest? And I'm not just talking about that, you know, soft girl life and the soft girl era that everybody's talking about right now, or even the hot girl summer where Black women just want to be kept and all those narratives, even though I will say, what's wrong with Black women being kept, okay? I mean, get into it. But how can we explore alternatives to us living in ways that are more easeful, more restful, more joyful, more pleasurable? And so I've questioned, if we rest during the month of Black August, is that considered activism? If we center rest and healing, does that contribute to resistance? And according to this book that I've been reading called All the Black Girls Are Activists by author Ebony Janice, she's exploring that tension between activism that requires us to continue to put our bodies on the line, that requires us to work and overwork on behalf of our family, our children, and community. And she's having a tension, she's bringing that intention with this concept of what do we really mean when we talk about revolution? And she defines revolution. And revolution is defined as involving or causing a complete or dramatic change. And so when we think about Black people's experience in America since our arrival, being brought here in bondage and being forced to work and literally build this country and literally build the economic wealth and the generational wealth and build the land and till the soil and literally our blood, sweat, and tears built this country. We were brought here to work on behalf of white supremacy. And if that is what was the status quo, right, if our entire existence is to work and be the mules, she references in the book, Ebony Janice references Zora Neale Hurston's, a quote from Their Eyes Were Watching God, when the person in the book says, the nigger woman is the mule of the world, right? That our whole existence, especially as Black women, is to actually like work for the world, carry people on our backs, right? If we want to have a revolution, which is a complete or dramatic change, then wouldn't the complete and dramatic change be the opposite of us overworking? Wouldn't it be Black folks, Black women, Black moms chilling, resting, relaxing? That's the question that Ebony Janice is posing in this book, that all the Black girls are activists. And so a quote that she says in the book is, if the idea of Black women who historically don't get to chill is to promote an opportunity or possibility that causes Black women to actually chill, and the ripples of what happens once said Black woman chills makes the changes in society, then is that not an effort to promote, impede, and intervene into the social, political, economical, and environmental state very much causing a complete and dramatic change? Question, question, question. Right? Why is it not possible to see Black women resting, relaxing, enjoying ourselves, being creative, frolicking, having fun, being playful? Why can't we see that as a contribution to resistance? We're trying to resist this narrative that we are here to work, 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 work. And I know Rihanna got a song, quack, 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 but it's also time for us to rest and to not overwork ourselves to try to prove ourselves and not to live into the Black Superwoman concept. And so honoring Black August, honoring Black rest as resistance, P4L is trying to create resources for the month of August so that you can tap into your ability to rest or to heal, right? Okay. And we know that this is important. We got to create it for ourselves. Again, see, I got to still work to give us space to rest. It's, you know, I love you. I love Black people. So this is what I'm doing. Because, you know, there's data that shows that even though, you know, self-care, self-love, self-everything, take care of yourself, wellness is on the rise, a new report found that there is a lack of culturally appropriate self-care tools and resources, which is impacting Black women, right? That came out in June 2023, this report. So if this report is saying that there's not a lot of resources for Black women to get access to Black healing and Black wellness, so then we create it for ourselves. And so be on the lookout, because Parenting for Liberation August is going to be launching a Black Joy Healing Box. 50 boxes will go out to Black parents. All you got to do is go on our website and sign up. If you don't follow us on social media or you don't get our newsletters, you need to get into it so you can get one of these boxes. It's filled with goodies to support you and reclaiming your joy, and it has so many healing elements in it. So with this in box, we invite you to find your joy, whether it be turning up or turning down. It's a joy-filled experience in a box. So the box was curated to create spaces for you to enjoy your blackness and create your own joy practices. The box includes like candles, crayons, an inspirational coloring book, bubbles, a Black Joy playlist, an affirmation deck, and other things. So I invite you to play, blow bubbles, color, affirm yourself, light a candle, sip some joy tea, and engage in your own joy practices. This is an act of living our ancestors' dreams and simultaneously continuing to keep our dream alive for our descendants. Take some time and some space to be the living embodiment of the future we imagine, where you, as a Black parent or caregiver, can actively reclaim your Black joy. This is one of my gifts to Black liberation, Black parents, children, and community. So please enjoy. Sign up. And then another offering that we're offering in the month of August is in collaboration with Naima Ifia, a healing justice practitioner. She's a liberation-based educator, an activist, and a holistic health practitioner. She's hosting an incredible retreat in Costa Rica that centers Black parents and caregivers. During the retreat, we'll be exploring similar questions like, what does it mean for Black parents to have support? What is the village that Black parents need to build so that we can have the support that we need to raise the next generation? She's collaborating with us at Parenting for Liberation, and she is holding 5 spots for Parenting for Liberation folks, and they will get a discounted rate. So P4L will be sponsoring 5 Black parents to go on this trip to Costa Rica. It happens in the fall, but you need to book your spot in August. The code will be able to give you $1,000 off the price of the trip. So that's a huge discount. More information will be available in our letter, right? So if you don't follow us on social media or get our newsletter, go to our website and sign up. And so with that, I'm going to transition to our episode. On this episode, we speak with Dr. Raquel Martin. She is an experienced licensed clinical psychologist. She's a devoted university professor and acclaimed researcher and scientist who believes deeply in the power of Black mental wealth, which she defines as an affirming lifelong journey that encourages Black people to center mental health practices as integral and intentionally linked to success and well-being. Dr. Martin is also the host of Mind Your Mental podcast and a highly sought after and renowned speaker with a rapidly growing and engaged following. Enjoy the episode.
Thank you.
Hey y'all, this is Trina. Welcome to Parenting for Liberation. And on this episode, I am super excited to speak with the Dr. Martin. Dr. Martin here is how she introduced all her video. Dr. Raquel Martin is an incredible, incredible, brilliant mind that is doing the work while also sharing it in content so easily. She is a licensed clinical psychologist. She's a university professor. She's a researcher and a scientist. Yes, black girls, you can be a scientist too. And she just has a wealth of information. And I'm going to read her bio longer earlier. But welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. When I met you, I was like, you remind me of my cousin. I thought I knew you from another thing. And so it's just like you just talk about important content in ways that are super relatable, even though you have all the like letters after your name and the degrees and the, you know, all those things. You just talk about it in ways that are so plain and so relatable. So I appreciate you from speaking, you know, to the Compton girl in me about all this mental health stuff. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I had the unique honor of meeting you at the Momference. You stopped by my vending table. The conference, the Momference, incredible conference, black mamas, like hundreds and hundreds of black mamas, beautiful black women from all over in the DC area coming together. And I had the opportunity to vend and to sell, you know, some of Parenting for Liberation's merchandise, books, affirmation cards. And although the theme was about rest as resistance was the theme, I was tired. I was exhausted. Yeah. I have no rest. I am lugging stuff from across the country to sell at this event. I said, baby, never again. I got to figure out another way to do vending. But I was exhausted, as I'm sure a lot of folks were. And I remember talking to you very briefly at the vending booth and being like, I'm exhausted. And it was from the carrying all the stuff. But there was also this exhaustion from feeling like I was missing something for my kid. And I was exhausted with like the impact of like feeling guilty that I was away and it was a good time. And I'm like, wait, I'm having fun and I'm missing. I think my kid had a baseball game or something. And I remember having all that shame and guilt. And I remember you like being like, it's okay to miss stuff. Like you can't be everywhere. Who said that you're supposed to do all the things and be all the ways there? And I was like, wait, isn't that what it means to be a mama?
And, not this mama, honey.
And then you were telling me, yeah, so tell me, because I don't want to like mince your words because it was some months ago, but you definitely like something you said made me go, I need to talk to her because I want to have a little bit more of that.
Yeah, I think so. The biggest thing is like, one, our children are involved in so many different things that it's not possible to be present for everything. I also think that there's this aspect that's been passed down from generation to generation that mom, like motherhood and martyrdom are synonyms, like, and that you were supposed to sacrifice so much of yourself to be a mother. And I think that's super inappropriate. And I don't think that is conducive to an appropriate relationship with yourself or with your children or with your partner or with your job or any other relationships that you hold, because you need to have time for yourself. What's best for you will always be best for your children, right? Like I did a talk, the talk that I did at the Momference was about centering the humanity of black children. But the beginning of that conversation was, you cannot embrace your child's humanity, because we know black children get dehumanized. So it's our job to also make sure that we're embracing their humanity and centering their experience. But you can only embrace your child's humanity after you embrace your own humanity. And the removal of human characteristics and features from the black community overall really just contributes to oppression and racism. And we do that by stating that black children shouldn't have emotion, or black people shouldn't have emotions or feelings unless they're acceptable. So that's where I always feel like specifically within the black community, the whole aspect of, you know, toxic guilt or toxic shame or having difficulty expressing your emotions comes from. You know, I very much feel as though that is a tool of white supremacy. I very much feel as though that's a tool of oppression. When we are dehumanized, it gets internalized, it gets injected into us that we internalize it. And then we do it to each other. And it's like, don't cry about that. You need to suck it up. Don't ask for help. Help isn't going to save you. Even if you're exhausted, deal with it. That very much has to be from, you know, masters telling us that we're not humans. We work for them. We're property. There's no aspect of you having a feeling because you're a product, right? So the talk was about centering the humanity of black children. But I started off with, you can't center anyone's humanity until you center your own. You can't let your children know that mistakes are okay until you let yourself know that mistakes are okay. You can't let your children know that it's all right to take space and do things solely for them until you tell yourself and acknowledge that it's okay to take space and do stuff only for me. It starts with you, because what's best for you will always be what's best for your family, no matter what. And I think a lot of times that is not shared with people, especially with the Black community. And I think motherhood is amazing. Parenthood is amazing. And it's a wonderful, I always call it like the mama mafia. It's a wonderful community to be in. But it can also be incredibly isolating and toxic when we don't normalize saying that I'm tired. Right. I typically be like, I don't want to do this, so I'm not going to. I tell my child I need space. The other day he told his brother he needed space, and I felt that was amazing because he heard that from me. I want a hug. I don't want a hug right now. So I can give you a hug in 5 minutes. I just need some time to myself, and then I'll come and give you the hug you deserve. And when his brother was in his face, going upside his head, he's one. He said, Jaden, I need space. You're hitting me. We don't use our hands to hit.
I love it.
So I picked up that baby and moved him. It's like, your brother said he needs space. Get out of his face.
Give him some space. I love it. Man, you said so much in there, because I'm still stuck on the motherhood and martyrdom are not synonyms. And I'm all like,
right.
Are you sure? and not even in a joking way. I had to like sit with that, because it's like an unspoken assumption. It's like an unspoken expectation. Not that you martyr yourself, but come pretty damn close. Because when you become a mother or a parent, I think it is something heavily tied to mothering, where your identity then just comes your relationship to this other human. And so much of my identity, for example, when I became a mother, I lost it. And I feel like I'm starting to finally get it back because my kid is older, right? I'm like, oh, I'm at this point, right, where I could like liberate myself from motherhood. and even still, when I do, I have a lot of guilt. Like if I travel a lot for work. And when I travel for work, I feel like it's more justified, right? Like, well, I'm going for work, or this is for work, or this is for business, or this is to, you know, put food on the table, you know, whatever the narrative I tell myself, that makes it okay to be away. But when I'm going just for Trina, like, you know, I go for work and then I stay a couple of days, or I'm going to do an extra stop at this place to hang out with some friends or to catch up. Like all of those things, I often feel guilty. I often feel like, unless my kid is, you know, fine and having a great time with somebody, or it's with his dad, or he's, you know, but if I feel like, oh my gosh, I should be there for something, the guilt sometimes eats away at the joy of the time of being away. And then I'm like, well, that's completely a waste of resources, completely a waste of time. Not completely a waste, but it feels like I'm not doing what I need to do for me. And so I'm curious about like this mom guilt that we talk about, and like it showing up differently for Black women, but because of the added layer of like needing to be there for your children to keep them safe from all the things like white supremacy, racism, anti-Blackness, feeling like this extra charge of needing to be there and be present and all the ways for your children to keep them safe, even though in reality we know that we really can't keep them safe from that stuff. Yeah, how does it, I know you said it's like connected to racism and our masters telling us that, but like, how do we keep inflicting it on ourselves, and what can we do to get out of it is really my question.
I think you said it perfectly when you said all of the things that contribute to you feeling like you have to do more. A lot of times I think, I would say all the time, there are Black parents who parent out of, and not even just Black parents, parents of Black children as well, because every parent of a Black child is not Black. Like, you know, many times that is the same relationship, but sometimes it's not, you know? So many times parents of Black children parent out of racism related fear, which means that you alter the opportunities that your children have, or the places you allow them to go, or even the career paths that you expose them to, or the clothes that they can wear, because you understand that racism exists. You understand our children are not seen as children for long. You understand that they may not be protected in the same way that their European American counterpart will be protected. So in order to do that, you feel the need to take that on yourself. Like, for example, my mom always told me, like, don't borrow anything from anyone. At one time, I was at a predominantly white school, and she said, if something goes missing, they're going to look at you. Don't borrow anything from anyone. Everyone doesn't get that message, right? And it's not like they're going to look at you because, you know, just because we're going to look at all the children equally. They're going to look at you because you're the only black person there, so don't borrow anything from anyone. But think about that, like the whole aspect that takes on sharing. No, you can't wear that hoodie. Everybody else is wearing hoodies and ski masks. You can't do it, right? Because their skin shows through and so does yours. It's not going to be seen the same. So when you're parenting out of racism-related fear, a lot of times, sometimes parents have this mindset of the world is a tough place and I'm going to be tougher to prepare you. I always state that the world is a tough place, so I'm going to be a soft place for you to land. And that happens a lot with Black parents. And when we have the aspect of mom guilt, it can be the fact that we feel the need to be everywhere, not only because of the fact that there are inappropriate norms and expectations placed on mothers specifically, and that is stated overtly and covertly, because you said it's like an unspoken thing. A lot of times it also is spoken. I see a lot of people say working mom. I can remember last time I say working dad. I see people say single mom. Very rarely do I hear absentee father. You know, we're blaming the parent that stayed. That makes no sense.
Right.
That's absurd.
Right.
You know? So it's stated covertly, but it's also stated overtly, right? And we have this fear, and we fear out of racism-related stress. That's how we parent at times. And there's also the aspects of like guilt versus shame versus toxic guilt and shame. Like, you know, guilt typically has to do with
break
an
it
action.
Down. Break it down.
Yeah. guilt typically has to do with an action, right? You have some aspect of remorse regarding the action versus shame has to do with your identity. And characteristics that define you. Guilt is more so like what I did was bad. That action was bad. Versus shame is I am bad. It's not about the action. And toxic shame is deeper than that, right? Like we all feel guilt or shame at some point. That just happens. But toxic shame starts to impede upon the way you see yourself. It impedes upon the way you engage with people. You know, there are multiple contributors to toxic shame, but a big one is humiliation. Like toxic shame and toxic guilt are pretty typical contributors to the development of mental health diagnoses. And they really very much contribute to the development of like maladaptive emotional schemas. Schemas are just the way that we perceive, interpret, evaluate, and respond to emotions. So when we are being humiliated and toxic shame and toxic guilt are happening, we put on these rose-colored glasses that deal with the way we perceive, the way people engage with us, the way we interpret that, the way we evaluate that, the way we respond to our emotions of any kind. You know, if you have on rose-colored glasses and the person next to you doesn't, we could be looking at the same sky. Right? And you see the sky is blue and I see the sky is pink. We're both right. Mm-hmm. We're both right. Mm-hmm. Right? But like that toxic shame and that toxic guilt, that's the filter that you're going to see everything in. When you think of emotional schema and the way you may be responding and you may have like a negative attribution bias, that those are your glasses. Someone's trying to tell you the sky is blue. You try to tell them the sky is pink. Spoiler alert, you're both right.
I always right? say, I'm like, multiple truths can exist at the same time.
Multiple truths could exist at the same time, right? So a lot of times we're having the aspect of, as Black parents, that mom guilt and having these concerns of toxic shame, it really is a cycle. It really is that aspect of we do it to ourselves in terms of dehumanization. We very much do.
Yeah.
Because if you're removing human qualities from a person, a group of people, which is happening with Black people, human qualities are like imperfection. Human qualities are sadness. Human qualities are anger. But when we do what we do to each other is you have to be perfect. You got to try 10 times as hard. You don't get to be mad about this. We got to work. You could be happy, but don't start feeling yourself and smelling yourself too much. There's this huge infatuation, you know, with humbling the Black community. And it's absurd to me, you know? So it happens because it was once done to us. And now we do it to ourselves. You know, when it comes to oppression, there are different levels of oppression in this world. We have you know, systemic, we have institutional, we have injected. But I always state that like injected leads to internalized. People inject oppression into us to make us think that we are stupid, not smart, not feminine, not children for long. And then that becomes internalized. Because then we start saying it to ourselves. I always say when it comes to engaging with children and individuals, you only have to tell a child that they are stupid three times. They will tell themselves they are stupid the fourth. That injected oppression turns into internalized, and it starts to shift everything they see and do. So when we have individuals in the community that are putting stereotypes on us as mothers, as Black people, they keep doing it through media and books and just encounters and stereotypes. We do it to ourselves too. And we may not even know that we're doing it. That's why parenting Black children, that's why parenting while Black is never going to be the same. Because all of these things happen in the way, in a social context, and the way that the world engages with Black people, the way the world engages with Black children, Black women is different. So the way that we engage with others is also going to be different. So I would say that it starts with us. It's a vicious cycle, but it could also, any cycle can be ended, right? But it starts with embracing your own humanity and stating that you have to get comfortable with imperfection. You teach your children to forgive by forgiving yourself, by making mistakes in front of them and apologizing for those mistakes so they understand that everyone makes mistakes. By embracing your identity outside of motherhood, because you don't want your child to think that any relationship centers upon them. They need to understand that, like, yes, I may be this person's friend, but they have other friends. Yes, I am my mother's child, but I have another identity. You don't want them to think that one person is supposed to fulfill everything for them, because that's inappropriate. You shouldn't only see yourself as relationships to others. I shouldn't only see myself as a mom, as a sister, as a friend, as a partner. I also need to see myself as just Raquel. And how do I relate to myself? When you teach children that, like, my whole identity is you, one, that is a huge responsibility. Like, oh, well, you know, this is my whole responsibility is to be in my parents' life. And then when they start, you know, having autonomy and stuff like that, it leads to issues in the first place because they should want to separate from you and build their own identity. But also it's inappropriate to think that everything should be on one person.
I mean, they need to understand, but that's that how too. It is. I'm like, that's how it is. And I mean, so much of this is like, ooh, stop trying to come for me today. Dr. Martin here, coming for Trina. Because I'm like, ooh. So when you talked about like toxic shame and all that, I was like, oh, that's that tape that I used to play that was like, oh, you're a bad mom or you're not a good mom or, oh, mom should be there. You know, like, I'm like, oh, so that's that tape I need to kind of, like, delete, remix, throw away. Ain't nobody listening to tapes anymore anyways. I need to just stream something else. So I need to do that. Because that is totally what comes up, right? It becomes, like, an identity thing. Less, oh, I did this thing and, you know, I did this action. It's more like, oh, it just speaks. I, like, make this whole a definitive statement about who I am and how I show up as a mother, for example.
Yeah.
So that totally is true. And all the things that you were saying about what parenting from fear looks like, people who've listened to this podcast since it started knows, like, I've done all those things. That was me. I policed what he wore. I policed what he could do, where he could go. I, you know, and I say it like as if past tense, I've done it and I still am working on it, y'all. I'm not perfect, right? And I, like you said, like, it's about honoring the imperfections, because I still, like, that thing that your mom told you about, like, don't borrow from people, I'm like, I've never said that. And I was like, oh, shoot, should I have said that? But no, I didn't say that. but I was like, I say other things, or I'm still grappling with him being in a predominantly non-Black space, and I'm like, he's becoming a teenager. And I'm just like, as you become a teenager and start to individuate and start to hang out with your friends and your peers, it's like, you know, you might be the only Black kid in your peer group when y'all are hanging out. And so what does that mean? There's some things that you can, that they can do and it will be easeful. And there's some things that I feel like you can't do. And like how to have that conversation with the teenager who's like, well, fuck, this is so horrible. Like, because I'm Black, I can't do certain things. And then like, then what does that mean about Blackness for him? Like, damn. It's a burden, it's a barrier, as opposed to something to be proud of, that which is what I've been trying to instill his whole life, right? That it's something to be proud of, and it's our culture and rich history and all of that, right? And so
yeah.
I'm still, you know, I'm still like, how we do this, right? Even though I know it, I still feel like as the mom, I have to be like, let me help him understand the situation that he might be in, right? And how to do it in a way that's not like, no, you can't do this, and to be fearful, but to just help him to understand, like, you know, this may be how people see the situation. People who might live and experience and walk in the world with some implicit bias, or this is what statistics say about these things. Like, how do you explain it to your, especially the older kids who are older and starting to understand inequity and oppression and violence and racism, in a way that doesn't make them start to chip away at their esteem, right? And their sense of self. How do you balance that?
Well, you're already doing a good job, because the thing is, one of the important things is to have the conversations. Sometimes we avoid conversations with children because it makes us uncomfortable. Most of the time, you know, parenting tells us more about ourselves than it tells us about our children.
Right.
Because we get uncomfortable with, we don't know what the next question could be, or we don't know the full answer, so we avoid the topic overall. So the fact that you're not even avoiding the topic, that's already good. When I used to do public speaking, and sometimes when I still do public speaking, but when I first started in my PhD program, you had to start earlier on. I've been doing presentations in front of academics since my 20s. It's a requirement, like publications and stuff like that. And my voice would shake. And I thought everyone could hear it, but I would record myself, and apparently you couldn't hear it as predominantly as I thought. But my conversation with myself is, do it while your voice shakes. Because no matter what, I have to get it done. And it really is about operating in this realm of a healthy level of fear. Like, without any form of stress, you would have no motivation. There's distress, which is the negative, you know, the having significant difficulties. But there's also stress. It's called eustress, E-U-stress. And that's the good kind of stress. That's the stress that motivates you to go farther. That's the stress that's just like, you have a good outcome afterwards. Like, say you're about to, before starting this podcast, and it's like, all right, I got 15 minutes left. Let me knock these things out so I can start on time. That's not distress. That's eustress. Because if you weren't worried about starting on time to start this project that you've been and put so much of your time and energy in, you wouldn't be motivated to do it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, I always tell parents when they're talking, they have this question about, how do I do this and not scare the crap out of my child? How do I have these conversations with them? But also, don't take away the aspect of Black joy is starting having the conversation. Don't avoid the conversation. The conversation is going to change over time. But when I say it's going to change over time, I really want you to understand that these are repeated conversations. No one has the talk about race and ethnicity and police brutality and oppression once. Right. They should be having it over time. The only thing that changes is that the child may have more questions. You may have different language. You may incorporate more examples, because you want to align the examples according to what they understand. Like, when I'm talking about oppression with, let's say, like, six-year-olds, because they can understand oppression too. I talk about fairness.
I was like, fairness, that's their favorite.
That's their favorite, because a child will tell you what is not fair.
It's not fair, sharing.
Yes.
They love equality.
They love equality, right? So even saying that, like, if I was talking to a high schooler, I'm like, well, you know, we talk about the different levels of oppression. You're talking about the dress code policy. I said, all right, well, that's institutional oppression. Say you talk about, like, the way people talk to you, and then you start telling yourself the same thing. That's internalized oppression. That's high school, middle school stuff. But if I'm talking to a younger kid, I'm like, all right, so your friend has red hair. Right. You only have one friend with red hair. But say my child loves cookies, which they all do. Say only your friend with red hair is allowed to have cookies.
That's not fair.
That's not fair. And, like, why do they get to have cookies? Well, they were born with red hair and you weren't born with red hair. So we decided only redheaded people get to have cookies. We like them more. They're smarter. We just decided that. Is that fair? No. That's what oppression is, sweetie. That's what oppression is. People have decided that because you were born a certain way, we have decided that that means that you deserve more. And even like, well, that kid with the red hair isn't smarter than me. Yeah, you're right. And there's no facts in that. And that's what oppression is too. It's not based on fact, honey. It's just based on someone's opinion. Because that is what oppression is, right? It's just the ideology that someone has decided that they are better than you. They're smarter than you. And mm-hmm. Because of that, they get to decide what you have access to, from mm-hmm. food to home to housing to money. Mm. And none of it is based on fact.
No facts.
Right?
Mic
drop. There's no facts there. Because that's the, and I always state that, like, you know, there's no way to, I always pursue, you know, I have a I pursue intellect, right? And it doesn't mean I feel like I need to be right all the time, because I won't. I just like the pursuit of knowledge and books and documentaries and engagement with other people.
You're a lifelong learner. Like my mom says.
Lifelong learner, right? The issue with supremacy and supremacists that I will always have is that you cannot be educated and be a supremacist. It's stupid. There are no facts there, right? So right. Not only do I have no form of respect for you as a person because you feel as though my humanity is in question, and anyone who has any kind of attack on my fam is going to attack on me. And when I say fam, I mean the Black community overall. That's me.
Your right cousins there, and
you know?
Them.
Like, he, she, they, all of them, right? That, so we already got a problem. But it's also like, I take umbrage with the fact that you're so stupid. I really can't, I just can't vibe with stupidity. And it's
audacious stupidity.
Audacious stupidity. Stupid, you know, because it's just like, you can't
prove it. How can you prove it?
You can't prove it. You can't be a racist or a white supremacist and be educated. They don't go together, because education would let you know that all of this is false.
Yeah, it's all racism, learned. Social construct. It's all made up.
So, like, say I could get past, like, just you that I can't get past stupidity. I just never can, honey. So we're never going to vibe, sweetie. Just, you know, you're just not smart. All right, and it's intentional. And I just will never vibe with that, honey.
Stupidity as a choice. It don't look good on you. It don't look good on you. Stupidity.
It just don't look good on you. It's not a good look. It's fitting, but like, but anyway, I would say, just realize.
You said, let me just go on a soapbox real quick and talk about these stupid racists.
I respect intellect, and as a result, I cannot respect you, honey.
Listen, this is just a live show. So I want to hear your feelings about all the shenanigans in Florida with the whole slavery.
It's
pure, you know, slavery benefited Black people, and you know, they want to rewrite textbooks and stuff. I'm like, that's how crazy it is that that's how made up it is that
that's
now you could just switch the whole story and be like, actually, that thing called slavery, it actually was beneficial to the folks who wins. Like, you could just literally change the whole narrative and make up a new story. That's how made up it is.
And the thing is, when I originally saw the headline, I saw it as like, I didn't see the full, you know how if we don't expand something, it kind of minimizes, it doesn't show
you just
see
a little
text.
Snippet of it.
Yeah. So at first I thought I was seeing that, like, they're going to start teaching that in the enslavement of Africans, of individuals of African descent, benefited the U.S.
And you're like, finally, we're getting somewhere. They're admitting some truth.
Honey, but then when I expanded it, I said, oh, that is, that's not where I thought that was going. Like, legit was like, no.
You're like, wait, huh?
My heart soared and then crashed to the ground. And like, At first, I thought, like, oh, this is an article stating that, like, you know, Florida is finally trying to, you know, get it right. And they're going to start educating on, like, the different policies and the different ways that to this day, European Americans and individuals in the country has benefited from the enslavement of Africans and still benefits. That's where I thought it was going. And I was like, great.
He was too hopeful.
So we can get to the
it said Florida. It said Florida.
Yes. Oh. But then I was like, well, let me
click the whole link.
Hit the little green button to expand the full window. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, that's more on brand. That's actually more Florida. I don't know what I was thinking. That's more on brand with Florida.
It's wild.
Is it appropriate? Like, if you're going to do it the other way and talk about, like, the way that the country has and still does, because a lot of times people like to talk about enslavement like it's
the past.
You know, like it's the past and people aren't still benefiting. It is. So if people want to know how to do it accurately, you know, yes, you can talk about the benefit of enslavement of Africans, but you're going to talk about the benefit and how and who benefited, correct? You're
going
to talk about the fact to this day, right? You're going to talk about if you can track any of the old money in this country, the people who run the money in this country, there's no way you're not going to track it back to wealth is generational. And if we're talking generational, we're talking about the enslavement of individuals of African descent and Africans.
Who
you know?
Built so it's the just people's like, generational wealth.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So it's like you can't. No, like so.
Yeah,
it's wrong. It's wrong. But even
I'm so sad that you thought it was the other way. I'm so sad that your heart got broken.
And that's why you always, you need to listen, always expand the window, guys. Because message,
expand the window.
And expand the window, zoom out. Because I tell you what, when I'm educating my students and we do our classes, we always, I say, like, in all my classes, we're going to talk about the micro and the macro, right? If we talk about Psych of the Black Experience, if you're talking about the way something impacts you individually, then I want you to expand yourself and I want you to be an agent for change, because as a Black person, I guarantee you someone else has that experience, and I want you to find out the way to change it in the macro, right? Like, say we talk about the Crown Act and hair discrimination. Mm-hmm. Every single Black person, he, she, they has had a moment where they were told their hair wasn't professional, covertly or overtly, where they were told to change their hair, when they were not able to participate in a program because their hair was kinky or was against school code violation, right? If we look at the micro, we're looking at the way that impacts us individually. So the macro is when four amazing women decided to create the Crown Act to make sure that the change impacts all of us, right? Like, we are mm-hmm. going to be agents of change. And that's one of the things I typically tell when you're educating your children, when you're talking about the impact of oppression and racism and things like that. And you don't want them to get overpowered. You don't want them to feel sad. And, you know, one, I want you to realize it's okay for them to feel sad. They're going to feel sad because I guarantee you, you do. It's okay for them to feel angry about it, about racism and oppression, because I guarantee you do. I want you to share that with them. I don't want you to make them feel as though, I don't want you to dehumanize them or yourselves in this experience, right? Mm-hmm. They're saying they feel sad. I understand. I feel sad about this too. You're feeling angry. I understand. I feel angry about this too. And you have every right to do this. And let me tell you something. This is how I deal with that anger. Mm. This is how I deal with that sadness. I don't try to move it. I try to let it motivate me. You know, I feel angry about stuff all the time when it comes to the Black community and the way we're treated. So that's why I'm a psychologist, right? When it comes to being a liberation psychologist, when it comes to trying to find ways to help Black people emancipate themselves from this pain that gets placed on us, I make sure I do it actively with tangible things. I make sure my job prioritizes Black people. I make sure my message prioritizes Black people. I make sure that you are seen. I make sure that I have sliding scales so that more Black people can see me. I make sure that I emphasize the fact that, like, mental health and Black mental health is different. And I want you to feel seen uniquely about the Black experience. And I put that on social media so you can get that for free. I speak at an HBCU to make sure that I'm governing and working with the next generation of Black people so that they feel seen in my classroom and in this world, right? Like, you, when you're giving your children these messages, when you're having these conversations with them that are going to happen over time, these are repeated messages. I also want you to normalize the feelings that they have, and I want you to tell them what you do about it.
Yeah.
And if you need more stuff to do about it, be like, let's find something to do, because protests and agents of change and policy, that starts at a young age.
Totally.
You know, something that impacts one Black person will impact many. How would you change that? Do you want to, we can do protests. We can we can make sure our job impacts Black people and helps them, you know, because a lot of Black people are active in agents of change. They chose their career path as a way of being activists. Hip hop artists, activism, right? Music, activism, art, activism, all of it. We do it because we see the way the world treats us and we want to contribute to our community too. That's why I state that I focus on Black mental health. But the way to help your children, you got to balance that. Because when we talk about, like, racial socialization, the way we socialize children about their Black experience, you have different factors of it. You have protective, which is where you're talking about racism and oppression and bias. And you have proactive, when you're talking about cultural pride and empowerment. And as children get older, we stop doing as many messages, proactive messages about empowerment and pride. And we do more messages about bias and oppression and racism because we know that they're going to be adultified and treated that way. And as they get more autonomy, they're around us less and we have less control over their environment. Mm-hmm. That's stressful for a child if we don't balance those. As they get older, we need to make sure we're still having conversations and outings about pride and culture. We're not only talking about the aspect of the hoodie and why we have fears about it. We also talk about the fact that it's not race-related stress, it's racism-related stress. There's nothing wrong with your race. Racism is the issue. Mm. And I don't want you to feel judged because of your race. I want you to understand that it's racism. And you still have the right to walk through this world the way you want to walk through this world. I just want you to know that everyone may not judge you appropriately, but that's not on you. So yes, I'm gonna tell you about the dangers of the hoodie. I'm also gonna tell you about, like, you know, use your fashion choice, be safe. You know, don't run, don't resist, don't reach. And I'm going to let you decide, you know, and walk through this life. So it's also important to balance that. with messages with as they age, with messages for boys and girls, individuals who don't identify as boy or girls, for children who are dark skin or lighter skin, because it's actually, there's plenty, and I can give you citations too, about like dark skin children get more messages about bias and distrust than light skin children do. Mm. Girls get more messages about clothing at times than boys do.
Hmm.
Like, you gotta make sure there's a balance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful, especially thinking about like when we stop giving more of the proactive. Because I actually thinking about even like children's literature, right? I think like the younger children's books are like, you know, Black is Beautiful, the Hair Love book, you know, all these, like there's a lot of things when they're younger to be like, I love my skin, I love my hair, I'm beautiful, I'm strong, I'm smart, I'm intelligent. I feel like those books, I don't know if I'm like, what's a good teenager book to make it, to still kind of instill, you know, even the movies and things like that. Like, what, where else in entertainment can we continue to find ways to instill cultural pride?
Listen, I'm about to, hopefully you don't hear too much static, because I'm about to walk through my bookshelf. So one, Well-Read Black Girl is a great start for young women.
I have that one.
It's all about narratives of like different stories for how people got introduced to their favorite authors overall. Also, a really, really good author that I like. Wait, I'm going through my bookcase right now. Where is she?
I love it. Real time. So many
people. Well, one real good book is and this is, it's called Brown Girls by Daphne Palacio Andreas. It centers like the Indian experience, but it's very much like I saw myself in this book. It's very good. There is another book, Black Enough by, hold on, that's at my other bookcase. Sorry, I got
like, is that enough is spelled like enough, or is it in E-N-U-F?
No, it's spelled E-N-O-U-G-H. Yeah, okay. So it's spelled the right, because you never know with these kids. I just be like, yo, y'all losing me here. Wait, where did I? And I just pulled these books out to show someone, and I was like, "Hey, this is because they." I get asked like, "So, what would you say, young adult wise?" And I was like, "Okay, let me walk through this house." my kids often keep touching my books, and I'm just like, "I love you, but I'm gonna be real with you. I've had the books longer than you, honey. Stop touching my stuff."
Ooh. like, I want to read, Mom.
These are just facts, okay? They were here before you. Don't mistreat. Oh yeah, okay. Black Enough. Okay, so this one is called. This one's like an anthology. It's won a lot of Black young adult authors. So I actually introduced children to this one because they're short stories, not children, like teens, and they're like 15 different authors, and you can follow up with like their individual books, right? So it's Black Enough, Stories of Being Young and Black in America.
Who's the editor?
And if you're like, oh, I really like this author, then it's like, okay, good, because this is a short story, but they also have more stories. There's also Tommy Adeyemi. Has a very Children of Bone and Blood, that series.
Oh, I love that series. I can't wait for the movie to come out.
The movie gonna come out, you know they're gonna ruin it. So, and you know, her third book coming out at the end of this.
I'm gonna read the book first before I watch the movie.
And then Bethany Morrow is a really good author. She also writes young adult books that are empowering, and they're really, really good. In my opinion, I could do this all day. There was one more. I'm gonna give you one more, and then we can get back on topic. I'm sorry. There was this one. There was one that was really, really good because I recently read it. I make it a point to read YA books too because it's like, you know, these are youth writing about youth stuff, and I really just want to know. And Nnedi Okorafor is also like just overall just one of the most amazing authors in life. Off the Record by Cameron Garrett. So this was a very good book. It was a young adult book. It's very good because not only is it good at describing the Black experience, also the girl has social anxiety, and it's one of the best descriptions of social anxiety I've ever heard from a teen's perspective. It was really, really good to the point where I was just like, yep, this is exactly how it is. And somebody may read it and feel like it's like overkill, but it was a really, really good description. And I always tell parents, I was like, it's always helpful to read books with your children. Like, you guys share book reading together because then you get to ask them questions. It's like, who do you identify with? And, you know, who is your favorite character? Who's your least favorite character? And pay attention, because a lot of times they identify with characters that remind them of themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you're reading this book, if you're reading Off the Record by Cameron Garrett, and your child's like, yeah, the main character has the same exact experiences as me, and you see this and you're like, this main character has a significant anxiety. Have you ever talked to your child about anxiety and how to manage it, right? So it's also helpful to read those books with your children too, because one, as children get older, you have to court them a little bit. They have autonomy. Let them, you know, you got to share experiences with them. But two, you can learn more about like what they enjoy. You can learn more about who they see themselves as. You can learn more about like which character they identify with. Because I was like, oh yeah, you're reading that book with your child. This child is really having difficulty with depression. They identify with that. But the child doesn't see it as, oh, I identify with this child because of depression. I identify with this character in the book just because they seem like me. And as the parent reading the book, you're like, this character's depressed. Is my baby depressed?
Right, though. That's the way that we have to learn. You know, it's right. You're right. Because I'm like, as when they get to those teenagers, it's like, you get those one word answers. How are you? Good. How was school? Fine. Okay. What are you enjoying? Right. You know, I try to ask more questions. I'm like, what about that friend named someone? Good. You know, I just get these like very short answers. And so you have to find other creative ways to try to open up and to learn more about your child, especially as they're, you know, they're in that phase of separation from parent and trying to come up with their own identity and who am I and what do I like and all of that teenager stuff.
You gotta like help them foster that. You gotta, you know, it's okay to, you're gonna have those conversations with them and that's amazing, but you also want to, you want to be honest and also like do some self-examination, because when you're thinking about racism and bias and prejudices, you also have to think about like, do I have any biases? My child is talking about they hate their hair. Where did they hear that from? Did they hear it from me looking in my mirror? You know, like, are you letting
body
your children
shaming?
Know all the time?
Are you body
shaming
yourself?
Are you mimicking me?
Yeah. Right? They are our mirror sometimes, or they reflect back sometimes. You know what's interesting? Talking about mirroring you, right? Sometimes we want our kids to be like us, and they are, like, not like us at all sometimes. Yeah. It's, like, the opposite. So I was appreciative of you naming, like, how activism earlier when you were talking about like activism can show up in all these other ways, like you chose to do your work as a way to in your commitment to Black people, Black community, through Black mental health. And I'm like, obviously I did all my social justice nonprofit stuff because of my commitment to community, and I'd be trying to get my son to go to stuff and he'd be like not feeling it. So I'm like, oh, also I think it's about how do we, it's a complicated thing because I'm reading this other book called by Ebony Janice or Janice, I don't know how she pronounces her name, called All the Black Girls Are Activists. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It just came out. And in the book she's
I just got it as a gift.
Oh, well, look at you being blessed with gifts. But it kind of is about this idea that like Black folks, in her book specifically Black women, Black girls, but in general Black folks have always had to be activists because we're always like resisting a whole system, right, of oppression at all times. Intentionally, unintentionally, we are always coming up against it, and so we're always resisting it. And that, like, in no matter what line of work, you could be working at, I don't know, you could just be a teacher and you're like not an activist, but then you end up being an activist if you're working in certain communities with certain students and you're really, you know, so it's like in all the roles we become activists because we're always activated. And so it made me realize as you were saying that when you're like, you know, artists are activists and hip hop activism. And I'm like, oh yeah, that he don't have to be like, I work at this social justice nonprofit, or I do this, or I show up to this march, or I protest, because it shows up often in how we show up as people if we're in this commitment to our own liberation as a people. And so I'm like, I just got to make sure I instill that and not make him like have to be, you know, in this work, because this work is exhausting too, by the way.
But also incorporating the fact that like there's so many ways to be activists, right? Like you are an activist every single day. You're able to show up as yourself and thrive instead of survive in an environment that didn't even want you to do that, right? So my life is activism, right? Me wearing my hair the way I want to wear my hair versus being in an environment that tries to make me sublimate my identity as a result of oppression and supremacy. That's activism. Your child feeling comfortable enough to like model the fact that they don't want to do something and showing their autonomy, which will likely come up when they become adults and doing that generationally in their next generation if they decide to do that. That is activism, right? When you think of all of the liberties and when you think of everything that has been taken away from Black people and the things that we are able to do now, thankful to the generation before us and currently that work to make sure that we can thrive instead of survive, you can really expand the window of identifying what activism is. As a parent, I want to make sure my children understand that I'm not going to do things that I don't want to do with my body. And I don't want you to do things that you don't want to do with your body, right? And in a generation, in a world where people literally force themselves on our bodies, mm-hmm. that is activism. Like, you know, like that is advocating for social change because it's going to impact the system. Anything that impacts you impacts an entire system. Mm. Having a generation of children who are understood that, like, if something makes me feel uncomfortable or unsafe in my body, I'm going to voice that to the adults around me instead of just saying that that's just what it is because of adults and they're allowed to do that to me. That's a social change. That's a political change.
It is. You know, totally.
I always say we shouldn't be playing the oppression Olympics, but the most oppressed groups, in my opinion, are children and Black people, and don't let it be a Black child.
Right.
Incredibly oppressed, you know? So it's just like, when you advocate for yourself, when you go toe-to-toe with me, respectfully, you know? when we talk about the difference between respect and obedience, that's activism, because it's going to impact every system that they're in.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why it's important to care for yourself as a parent and as a mother and realize that you need space, because what's best for you will be what's best for your child. You being more rested means that you can show up and be more present for your child when you are there. If I am exhausted and then I go to that soccer game with you knowing that I didn't want to go there, I'm a halfway pass out. I'm not going to give you the energy you deserve. And I'm not giving myself the energy I deserve. I can't be the parent that my children deserve. I can be the human that the world deserves from me as I walk through this world, having a human experience, if I'm not taking care of myself. You deserve a well-rested mom. You deserve a mom who could be present for you and have that conversation with you. But mom can't do that if I haven't been with you every single second of the day. Mm. When I was on maternity leave and I had to go and I was able to like go back to my own life for the first day, when my kids came home, I said, I am so glad I got the opportunity to miss you today. I can't miss you if you're here all the time, honey. I just can't.
Yes.
I legit told my sons, I was like, I'm so glad I got to miss you today.
Wow.
Right? Like you deserve that.
Yeah. I mean, absence makes the heart grow fonder, they say. But I do want to just like, as we close, I want to appreciate that, you know, you brought it back full circle. And I appreciate that because it's helping me to integrate this concept of rest as resistance, right? Like it is a form of resistance because Black people haven't been able to rest. It's just not, those two words don't even go, even though they assume and stereotype us as lazy, we are probably some of the most hardworking people. So
what
I know
did they
Hurston
say? Black people been lazy ever since they stopped working for free.
They was calling us lazy when we was doing it for free.
And honestly, you could do a whole talk on that because the whole aspect of like the whole Black laziness is a stereotype, and stereotypes have systemically worked to support the white supremacist narrative, and they change over time. Because before, when it comes to Black men specifically, the stereotype was that Black men were stupid, they were workhorses, and they would, you know, be compliant and follow what you told them, right? That was like the brute stereotype. And it was really much the aspect of slavery to make sure that the enslavement of Africans, to make sure that people felt comfortable having these people, not people, but like property in their homes. But then once emancipation happened, that's when the Black man became a savage. That's when the Black man started, was going to be like attacking you, always going to be dangerous. And then they also going to come after your most prized possession, your European American women, right?
Right, right.
It's only, the messaging is only meant to serve what is happening at the time. Before, they were docile and stupid, and they made the perfect enslaved property.
And
but then
now,
after emancipation, now they're angry. They want our women, and they're savages. Stereotypes are always meant to serve the greater bad when it comes to supremacy and oppression. I mean, you just watch the way they transition. Like, oh, I thought Black women were subservient. Oh, now they're angry. Oh, they're not subservient anymore. Oh, okay. So now the stereotype is that we're all angry and we don't know what we're doing.
Right.
You know, like the stereotypes.
We used to be the workhorses or the mules.
We used to be the workhorses.
And now we're lazy.
And now we're lazy.
Now we're lazy.
Like that. Now we're lazy. It's listen, always meant to serve their messaging.
And guess what? I'm going to take the lazy. I'm trying to take the lazy because we're not lazy, but what we do deserve is rest. We are tired. We have been working forever. You know? And so, and then also I really appreciate the closing out with literally our existence can be a form of resistance. Like if we show up as our whole selves, if we show up in our truth and we show up like just showing up in our wholeness is a form of resistance to oppression and white supremacy. And so I also am like trying to hold that. Like activism can look a variety of ways. And some of the activism could be like, I'm not showing up for that. I'm taking a nap. I'm going to sleep. I'm not going to be there. Like that is also a form of activism because I'm activating my ability to like create boundaries and to center myself in a world that says that we're not important to be centered. So I appreciate that.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, I know we are at time. I really appreciate you having this conversation with me. As you said, we could do another whole conversation about the stereotypes around Black people and how they've evolved. I might have to hit you up about that because I'm curious about all the other ones, like, you know, the promiscuous Black woman, the, you know,
Jezebel,
the Jezebel, the angel, all that.
Jezebel, and Sapphire, welfare queen, honey.
Aunt Jemima and all those ones.
Aunt Jemima, Mammy.
All those, exactly. I'm like, I need to talk to you and we need to play that song For Women by Nina Simone and then
honey,
break that
cry.
Down.
Let me tell you something. That, did you see the live performance? Was it the BET Awards?
Oh, who were the singers? Was it when Marsha Ambrosia was singing?
Oh my gosh. I
so good.
It was so
I've got
good.
To see, Lettucey had a show where she was performing a lot of Nina Simone. I forgot what the name of the show was. I got to see her in San Diego. She performed that. Oh, my gosh.
She's amazing. Let me tell you something. I was working at FedEx.
Her vocal FedEx range.
And Lettucey came in. And I was like, oh, my God, I love you. And, like, her, the range, she sounds exactly like her album. And I never want to say things look effortless because I know they work very hard at their craft. Because she makes it look effortless.
She looks like she could be, like, fouling her nails and hitting those notes.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, the breath control. She looks like she could legit just be, like, filing her nails. And she done hit
about 20 notes.
Oh my gosh.
She's amazing. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to do that. We're going to do that episode. Let me see. We're going to figure out a Nina Simone episode about four women song, but also looking at the evolution of the stereotypes of Black folks and how they have evolved to continue to support white supremacy. I'm saying it out loud so I can write it down later. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Fuma, for having me.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.